We'll get there. We'll get there.
Woo, we did it. Yeah. All right, and we may have one more teacher pop in, but I'm not sure. So I'm Catherine. I'm really glad to see you guys here for this wrap-up. I know for some people this isn't the most comfortable thing, especially for actually surprisingly for a lot of the teachers. It's kind of a scary. A lot of us like prefer to work off a script rather than what's the word I'm looking? Off the cuff. Thank you. Anyway, thank you for being here, and if you were part of our Strength to Love series, as people who listened online or in person, again, thank you very much. I'm just going to tell you a few things that are coming up, and then I'll stop. December 1st is our Advent series, and it's called Embodying Advent. We'll spend 4 Sundays looking at how we can not just be passive and wait, but actually participate and advance peace and hope and joy and faith in the world. So I hope you'll be part of that. But today is the wrap-up of the Strength to Love series, and I want to thank Wayne and Andrew because they were instrumental in putting this series together for us. And today you're part of the series. We want you to tell us what was notable about the series, how it impacted you, what was challenging or difficult to hear. And also, we're here to, if you ask questions, we will try to answer them. So this is a super quick recap, just to jog our memories, our collective memories. It was a long series. Strength to Love by Martin Luther King Jr. was the book we used, and we just picked, Andrew and Wayne selected one of the essays. The book is fabulous, if you want to read the entire book. And during this series, you heard many teachers talk about unity and disunity on the grand scale and also on the individual scale and also on the personal scale as we each had to grapple with the text ourselves. You heard us talk about why love matters and how the church collectively and we as individuals in the church have not always stepped into the revolutionary way of love that was taught by Jesus. And we spoke about the consequences of that, of not stepping into this revolutionary way of love, and how the consequences affect us all daily in the world we live in. Economic disparity, continuing discrimination, environmental degradation, divisive politics, and on. And we also talked about how difficult it is to engage in the way of love, both inwardly and outwardly, individually and collectively, and how challenging it is for each of us every moment to choose love. You also heard suggestions from us on ways to develop the strength to love, ways to grow in compassion and courage and empathy. This has been one of the most personally impactful series that I've participated in. I was telling the team earlier, I'm not their mom, but sometimes I feel like it. But I'm so proud of what they brought and how they engaged with the text and the book. And I was telling them that this is the series that each Sunday, it didn't stop for me. It kept going during the week. The words that they said, the words of the book, the words of Paul, just kept resonating with me. Like, I feel permeated with it. So I'm hopeful that this series actually is still in the process of changing me. Time will tell. You guys will all be able to tell if it's working or not. But for now, the idea of love, the strength to love, this whole concept of love, how God loving us, us loving God, us loving our neighbors, it's just been in the foreground of my thoughts the whole time, which does indeed increase the possibility that I will choose love, and I hope that's the truth for each of you. So what's going to happen is Wayne, I think, is going to say a few words, okay, and then we're going to open it up to you. And because I talk too much, I'm going to be walking around with a mic and holding it for you when you have something to say or ask, okay? You go.
In this group, you're the one that talks too much, right?
Yeah. Right at the end there, Catherine, as you were talking about
with all the focus and attention on love, like it starts to permeate, and it makes me think of the Shema and the command to love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your mind, with all your strength, and to keep it at the forefront of your mind, and to keep it bound to your hands as your actions, and just that relationship of where what we put our attention on, it comes out in our energy and our behavior. When we had our teaching team, our meeting the other day, and talking about wrap up, Catherine asked if there'd be a person or two that would be interested in sharing a little. And I shared this up front in my intro and disclaimer, how impactful not only this book is, but MLK Jr., just in my life and my upbringing through my father, who ended up being a Christian pacifist. I don't have to say too much, because I think Catherine just kind of nailed it in terms of the shininess, the attraction to this message of how I just want to keep on looking at it. I just want to keep on exploring it and letting it permeate. What a great word. So much so that for me, this has been a book I try to read on the annual. And I confess the last couple of years, it's been a lot harder to read it every year. But as an idealist, it really, at least it gives me something beautifully, it gives me something to look forward to in an ideal, a loving ideal. But the thing that I think I really took away this round of doing it that I just want to put out there for you is I think that I personally, my relationship with Paul has been in progress over the years. Most of the time I thought he is a misogynistic, religious, uptight piece of junk. And I look at his words now, and I look at what he's trying to communicate, and I think that I feel his frustration. Something happened on that road with him. He had a crazy mystical experience to be able to change his entire viewpoint of how he thought the world worked with his religious certainty. And whatever that experience that he had with the Christ, so much so that like for 3 years he had to go just sit and unpack it and try to figure out how to communicate this to people. And I think I can feel the frustration. And for me, one of the main areas of frustration is, how am I able to love at that capacity, the capacity that Jesus is inviting us into? How can I love at that capacity with this old operating system? And I think that was my last sermon with y'all, is just that need for an upgraded operating system in our minds. The Old Testament prophets looked forward to a day that the divine would give them new hearts that would allow them to love God and love their neighbor. And I think nowadays, for me, I think maybe a easier imagery to get around is I need an upgraded operating system. Reading the Strength to Love, reading this particular sermon, it exposes all the areas where I have very limited and immature definitions of love working in my operating system. It's a love based off of, you know, I'll love you if, I'll love, right? These conditions. And so the biggest thing I would just say, again, take away from me is really spending that time and energy and looking how to get my head in my heart, so to speak, so that I can actually listen and receive from the divine and actually obtain some of these characteristics of being able to love people without Wayne's stupid ideas getting in the way. So that was kind of my biggest takeaway, is just the need for, I think, all of us to have a new operating system. So that's a lot to just say that we need that. Then it should be followed directly by like, okay, Wayne, so how do we do that? So that should be next, but we'll open it up now.
So if you have a question or a comment, raise your hand and I'll bring the mic over so we can get it on the recording. If you don't want to be recorded, just let me know. Do I see anybody?
Hi there. When the series came out, I bought the book for Liz to read, and I kind of bought it for myself too. I think you know that. not to sully the gift, but I want to recommend that book. I want to thank the teaching team for bringing that book to us. That saying, the book is, it's thick, it's hard, it draws you in, and you have to think about it. And I found myself many times going, wait a minute, what did I just read? And the window into MLK Jr. is just wonderful. So I don't really have a question. I just have a gratitude for bringing that book to my awareness and bringing that into my life, and also you guys for teaching on it and setting the bar higher for myself to on how to really truly love others. So thank you.
Something that I wrote down, it was on the 3rd of this month, so just a couple of weeks ago, that really resonated with me and just kind of affirmed of how I try to truly live my life. And it was just nice to hear it in this context within everybody here. Walking the path of love. So we truly create that road by walking it, and it presents itself every single day. Conversations with strangers, with loved ones, with yourself, right? And really looking at the curiosity, looking at asking those questions when people come to me in my daily life, and maybe it's something that I don't agree with, be curious about it, ask the questions, and really understanding that those people are from the same source that we are. And that really helps tremendously just in my day-to-day life. Again, in business, relationships, everywhere, you have that opportunity. And it was just, again, really affirmed through this this lesson, and I'm very grateful for it. So thank you for coming up with it.
Oh, you have to hold it. I'm not allowed to touch it. Sorry. so I actually share a birthday with Martin Luther King Jr. And so he has, for a very long time, 39 years, been a source of encouragement to me, I think. And growing up and, like, really understanding my own privilege and trying to, you know, not just post the MLK Jr., like, phrase on my, you know, Facebook or my Instagram, but actually like walk it and live it. I think my question that I struggle with a lot in my life is I feel like we've become a society that doesn't have any sort of actual truth. Like nothing is true anymore. It's all an opinion or like wherever you're getting your information from source-wise. Well, that source is, you know, run by these people, so therefore it's not true. It's so A, like when we become a people that doesn't have a source of truth, how do we have loving, thoughtful conversations with people when we really truly feel like they are not being truthful? And how do you love someone when you vehemently oppose everything they stand for? Like, what is the actual, how do we actually do that as believers, as Christians? Like, it's just so, I struggle so much with that. And I don't know that there's a good answer. So, teachers?
I'm just going to say one quick thing. There are people in my family that I vehemently disagree with. But I loved them before, and so I have that, and that is what helps me to know that the other people that I don't know that I vehemently disagree with, I'm capable of loving them too. Just knowing you're capable is a first tiny little step. You guys can grab one of those other mics.
Hi. Music, harmony. It's really nice, isn't it? It feels so good when there's harmony. I think the upgraded operating system that Paul is inviting us into and other wisdom leaders around the centuries and around the world have invited us into is to seeing it less about the me and you, the us and them, the binary. And if everything is from source, if everything is made through the Christ, if I understand that maybe in like an energy, like in a frequency, in a song, then everybody is participating in it, whether they know it or not. And some are in harmony, some are closer to harmony than others. I don't know all the nuanced words, so please forgive me. And some are dissonance, right? And I can look at that person and their dissonance has an effect on me, and it has an effect on their families and themselves and on environments and on systems. But I think in that scene we see with Jesus, like, Father, forgive them, they don't know what they're doing. That's where I'm trying to tap into for me. Like, help me to, what do I have to do with my tuning fork? What do I have to do to invite them into a different harmony, into the song of the Christ? And in that way, I can be really frustrated and angry, which are two really accessible emotions for me. But I can also anticipate and look forward to the day that they're singing in harmony with us.
I'm 72, and I'm getting happier and happier about saying that. But one of the things, the advantages of being 72 is that I've had a 72-year journey. And I am not the person that I was 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 20 years ago. My values have changed. My concept of God has changed. My concept of me has changed. My concept of you has changed. Everyone is on a journey. And I think for those people who are grating against us, and it's the iron sharpening the iron, and many of those people are in our families, the gift that we can give them and the gift that we can give ourselves is the gift of listening and asking the question, what is important to you? What in this person that, you know, you don't have to say this part, this person that I find so offensive, what in this person inspires you? And what do you think is behind that, underneath that? In our family, we have someone who thinks very differently than I think now. But through talking to him, I was able to realize that a lot of his values right now are based on his own wounds, and that he's looking for someone who is a strong leader, you know, and a lot of bluster and that kind of thing. And just that thought gives me compassion for him, and I'm able to speak into that wounded part of him and try to say, you're safe here, and try to disarm it without ever talking about the issues at all. So just an idea.
Yeah, so what I would say is the person that I was in the 90s is a much different person I am today. In my 20s and 30s, and I was in process at that time, and I would have been considered in a certain block or group in America that we all look the same and seem the same and vote the same and don't cross us kind of thing. But I was maybe a black sheep, maybe not. I was probably one of many, many colored sheep in the group in a process. And no matter how strong or firm the wall looks on that other side, there's a heart in there and there's a brain and a process, but that's underway, you know what I'm saying? And that's one of the keys is not to throw out the baby with the bathwater, not to all the other cliches, burn the bridges, to keep those open relationships through compassionate listening and love and thinking. But one of the things about Martin Luther King that didn't necessarily come out in this series as much that I'm heavily aware of, and I think we all are, is that behind all the talk of love and getting along and an amazing future, the dream, I have a dream, there was a struggle, and there was a lot of resistance going on. And I don't know if you guys recall, but one of the things that I found in preparing for this talk, the talk that I gave, was my surprise to find out that love is tenacious, meaning that we're not pushovers in love. Love stands its ground. So I think we can walk and chew gum at the same time. I think on the one hand we can grow in our relationships and I mean use all the different techniques that we've been shown and given in our society through understanding psychology and how people work and don't work and what we're up to. I was thinking of James and his discussions and with he and I in the past on bias, you know, how bias works for everyone in this room and everyone else out there, and understanding those things, and we're communicating with very biased beings, and our self-monologue is very self-supporting, learning that stuff. But there's a whole nother level where, you know, as you're able to learn histories and understand facts and come with love, with an understanding of there are statistical realities out there that are more true than others, like, and there just are, and we don't know what they are all the time, but just to be patient and be tenacious, you know, and
Yeah, bless you. So I kind of got the opportunity to sort of teach on this stuff a little bit when I was teaching about church unity, and I kind of shifted that into a sermon about loving your enemies. And the big thing that really kind of hit me in going through that stuff is, like, as Wayne, we all kind of talked about this idea of trying to create a new operating system. I think in that same vein, we're trying to learn a new, deeper, richer kind of true understanding of what love actually means. And I know in some of the traditions that I've come up in, the definition of love has shifted into this, I'm going to give this to them whether they like it or not type thing. And I've seen a lot of really hurtful, hateful things come under the guise of tough love. And I don't, as I, you know, you talk about not knowing what truth is, all this kind of stuff, or we don't know what a definite truth is. As I'm trying to, like, come back to that litmus test of Jesus being the truth and all that stuff, I'm trying to understand more and more what he looks like. We have varying definitions and ideas of what that looks like from a lot of people, too. But as I try and get closer to that, I start to see, if the person you're loving doesn't feel loved by you, I think they're probably a good qualifier on that. So if you feel like you're getting kicked in the head, it's really hard to say, but they're loving me, you know. Now, going along with what I said of trying to come up with this new understanding of what love is, I was challenged in learning this stuff about, you know, King talking about loving his enemy and everything. I was really challenged by this idea, you know, we throw around, you talked about, like, the cute little quotes and everything, you know, darkness doesn't drive out darkness, light can do that. The essence of what that really means is, like, so transformative. And it connected me in my mind directly to the kind of the famous G.K. Chesterton quote of, like, Christianity has not been tried and found wanting. Christianity has been found difficult and left untried. And I think that same thing you could sub in this idea of love. I think this is the true essence of it. So this self-sacrificial love, this idea of how we love our enemies, we love people who don't agree with us, we have to get it back to that central true definition. And it is it is going to be so transformative, and it seems silly and naive when we're actually living that way, because it's been found difficult or left untried by so many of the people that we're coming in contact with. Does that make any sense at all?
Okay, I guess I'll say one or... There's not too much to add to all of that, but thank you all for sharing that. I guess two things I'll throw out real quick. One, and this is just helpful to me these days when I think about, like, what is love and what does that mean? I don't even remember where I heard this. I think it was from a writer I follow, but one of the core kind of convictions or voices or the felt sense of love is that to love something is to say it is good that you exist. And I think making sure to really that is the heart and the felt sense, like even amid the vehement disagreements, or I'm in my first year as a high school teacher, and that's something I try to come back to, like engaging with students, like it's good that you exist, it's good that you're here. And then we can, you know, have whatever constructive conversations we need to. So that, and the other thing too, I think, like, I think loving well takes a lot of discernment, and I think it's okay to retreat and to pull away and to perhaps distance ourselves from certain relationships for a time as we're healing and in process. And I think, I think Jesus models that for us, like he's constantly going away. You know, it wasn't just all on the ground duking it out with the Pharisees all the time, right? Like, they live to love another day. Yeah. And so I hope we all can give ourselves some grace and space and permission for that too, in the midst of it. Or even like Wayne was saying about Paul, you know, he has this crazy mystical experience, and then he kind of takes 3 years before he comes back out and kind of launches his ministry and begins writing the epistles and all that. So, it's okay, like, we don't always have to say something. Like, it's okay to be still, to pull away at moments.
I have a little story to say. Yes. I'm a preschool teacher. I'm considered a floater where I work, which means I go into the classrooms that need me at the time that they need me. And this week, I had to go into a classroom where I felt the teacher had something against me. And it's been going on for a couple of weeks, but every time I run into her, she shakes her head no and says little rude comments. So I was really dreading the fact that I had to go and be in her classroom. And I'm the type that don't like conflict, so I just stay away from it as possible, you know. But I was really dreading it, and I hate going to work dreading what I have to do because I love what I do. And so I just pretended everything was okay, you know, how we do that. And the day went all right. But at nap time, I'm sitting there, and I still have this feeling like it's just not right. You know, I don't know what I did or what I said or what I didn't do. And then this came into my mind, you know. And one of the things I remember someone saying was, if you didn't have the courage to stand up for what you believe in, nothing will change. And so at that moment, I texted this coworker who was in the same room as me. And I was like, you know, the day came out better than I expected it to be, because honestly, I was dreading working with you. Because I don't know what I did or didn't do, but I have the feeling you don't like me. And I kid you not, she opened up, and it was all based on a rumor she heard that I thought she wasn't a good teacher, which was not true because I thought she was great. And because I had the strength, because that was in my head, we ended nap time crying and hugging it out.
Thank you.
I like when those stories work.
Yeah.
Because sometimes, right?
Like, right.
You text them.
Has anyone tried any of the things that were suggested? I mean, you clearly did, but anybody else have any? You don't have to say that, oh, you had a success story, because sometimes it's just that you try. Or any other things we can address? Or oh.
Thank you. You know, Andrew, you started to touch on it, but I'd love to hear at least some other perspectives too about boundaries and when love does require boundaries. You know, I think hearing about loving your enemies sounds cool and like that's something that I could do, but I really don't want to. I would love to hear some either examples, experiences where you've had that's gone well, that's gone bad, anything in between. And when you've had to maybe set some of those boundaries, Andrew, like you're talking about, where you have to distance yourself from particularly toxic situations or things.
Thank you for that question. I was going to jump in when everybody was going, and it felt like it was a little redundant, so I'm glad that you came back to that question. Real simple one. There is nothing wrong with identifying how long that you can be present with somebody before you're going to be in a state of reactivity. And so the joke, and I'm sure I stole this off a podcast or something, but Denise and I have joked about how, like, some of our relatives, like, we have five-minute uncles. You guys know what I'm saying, right? Yeah, so, like, for 5 minutes, I can love you. I could be present, and then after that, I'm going to be in a reaction mode, in which case I'll either want to run away from you or sock you in the mouth. And none of those are restorative, and none of those exemplify harmony. And so, like, really being honest with yourself. And some of us, that's harder than others, right? Like, some of us want to, like, think the best about everybody, and it's going to be fine. But, like, no, check in with yourself. You know when you start to feel uneasy around someone, and set that limit before you get there. Before you get there. It's hard to access good logic when you're already in that state. So that would be my word.
I'm still kind of processing if there's anything to add to that, but any other thoughts? No. What Wayne said.
I think I saw it from Rob Bell, probably. Yeah.
Okay, I'll give you all a wise piece of advice. It comes from a very, very holy place. You got to know when to hold them. Know when to fold them. Know when to walk away. Know when to run. You're welcome.
Nice. Teachers, do you have any questions for the rest of us?
Well, I have a thought. Maybe you can react to it, maybe not. The spirit of a lot of questions are us and them, and, you know, the point about truth, like objective truth versus like your own truth. What if everyone really is true, right? Like, there's always truth in their perspective. There's some core of their experience is true. And so I think part of the challenge, the strength to love, rests in not being certain that you're right and being curious about, continuing to grow in your truth. And sometimes that involves like being open to other people's perspective. And I think, you know, you guys use the term like be curious, stay curious. And I think that's a good principle just in terms of not holding yourself so high and so infallible that you don't have anything to learn from somebody else. And I think if we can kind of wrestle with that, I think moving through the world in such a crazy polar way, like it reduces some of the magnetism and the polarity, right? Like it allows us to flow a little bit more between those spaces. Thoughts?
Is this on?
Okay. Yeah, that really hits kind of coming back to, like I said, what I got to preach on and all this. This idea that we're not defined by our deepest, darkest secrets. I don't identify in my biggest screw-ups. And this us and them thing, as I look at this other person, they are not, the things that I disagree with, that is not their totality. And in looking in this idea, going back to it's good that you exist, there is this total interconnectivity with all of us, and especially going back the series behind of shalom, like this is all supposed to be complete and together. And if we can start to see each person as that little fingerprint of God, that image bearer of God that is right and is supposed to be here, and I need them as much as they need me, and I hurt when they hurt, you know, and the things that I'm doing that are wrong or whatever, if you want to put it that way, are affecting people that I don't even know. There's a total web in all of this kind of stuff. I think being able to see that, the joke, at least between Wayne and I, but probably most of the teaching team, is that I'm slowly becoming a universalist. But there is, there we go. But there is that truth thing in the sense that, like, it's, you said it perfectly, Brian. Like, there's truth in everything that they say. So if somebody has an opinion that I completely don't agree with, if I'm really searching to nurture this shalom and this relationship with God, I should also open my eyes to try and see the truth in what they're saying, or at least see how it kind of resonates in their heart. There's something true that's causing these things, and it's, if I can also see that it's important to me that they are seen and that they are heard, that we are connected in that, I think that's the, kind of the start of being able to love everybody, whether I agree with them or not, because I'm connected to you. I'm a part of this. We're all together in this. So I think that's a huge thing.
So I think at this point, Wayne would probably hold up a diamond. Thank you. Yeah.
This doesn't come at the expense of that.
With that being said, so, you know, right versus wrong, there are so many different variables. You have family dynamics. You have generational trauma. You have early trauma. You have so many different variables when it comes to that. And being that curious, asking those questions, finding those truths that are in those little conversations. In the last year, I have been pretty overwhelmed where I thought, you know what, I've got this pretty figured out, right? Pretty nice guy, do the right thing majority of the time. And I've asked these questions, and it's come up, wow, I never even thought of it like that. There's a completely different side. And again, everyone in this room has their own opinion, has their own life story, has their own different variables. And that's where the curiosity has really helped me tremendously in finding those things.
And viewpoints and experiences give us a greater understanding of the divine.
100%. Because it all comes from the same place.
Talk about it. There's no one experience. Like, that's ridiculous. It's
arrogant. Yeah. Quick story as you go to. So I had a friend of mine. We used to hang out all the time, and we would walk down to this little like mini mart by his house, and the guy that worked at the mini mart was just a total jerk. He was racist. He would say rude things to girls that would come in there and everything. And just a real, real not a nice guy. He knew that my friend's dad had money, so whenever we'd go in there, he would ask him like when his dad's going to open up a strip club with him. He's like, come on, let's do this. And I would get so frustrated going to this place, and I remember telling my friend, why do we come here? This guy's a
an a-hole, basically. Yeah, sorry. Okay. Anyway, but my friend's statement to me, not being silly, whatever. When I'm standing up on stage, I don't know what I can and can't say, okay? So here we go. But so my friend said to me that was so profound, and it's really funny because it's affected me for years. But he's like, yeah, as we're walking away, just thinking about it, and he's like, but the world would be pretty boring without assholes, right? I was like, yes, there's an important side to it. We need these people in here. So. That probably didn't need to be said, but there you go.
Okay. So I actually really do wholeheartedly agree with everything you're saying. I tell my employees all the time, nobody is ever only bad or good. They're good, bad, and the ugly, and everything in between. We are all of these things, right? But how do you reconcile saying, like, it is good that you exist to, like, Hitler? Is it good that he existed? I fundamentally don't believe it is. I'm not saying that good things didn't come out of terrible, horrible things, but how do we reconcile in ourselves? Like, okay, so we're gonna just live with these horrible people and it's okay that, like, it's good that they exist? Like, I don't think that's true. Any response?
Yeah, thank you. I hear that. I think sitting it with it for a while and listening to all that's being said, I don't know if we're saying that it's okay. In fact, the invitation is to live in such a way that we invite everybody into harmony. And it seems like even in the initial story, the opening story, that opening poem in the first three chapters of Genesis, the desire was to go around and deem that which the divine said was good and for us to go around and say what is and what's not. And I think in the opening Gospel of John, which takes us back to that moment again and reminding us that everything that was created came through the Christ. I exist up here more often. I'm trying to learn how to come down in here. But for me, there's a little formula. And I don't want to speak in absolutes and say that it always works this way. But if the divine is in all, then I'm supposed to steward the goodness in all, even in the Hitlers. And I say that as an idealist. I say that I can feel in my body the resistance to what I'm saying to you. But I know in my heart that that's the way that it goes. So I'm equally confused, but I'm also hopeful.
I have a couple of thoughts to add. Going along with what Wayne said, is I think that we can separate the person from their actions, thoughts, deeds, and say, person is valuable as a creation, but these things that they did are not acceptable. And then I wanted to go back to the thought about boundaries, that, you know, when we're setting boundaries, what we're doing is we're teaching people, this is what I find to be acceptable ways for you to treat me, the people around me. And at a certain point to say, you know, this is not acceptable. I cannot continue to have conversation with you right now if you're going to use that language, those words, that tone of voice. And, you know, that line is going to be different for all of us of what we can deal with. But at a certain point, when we allow people to cross boundaries that we set or when we don't set boundaries, what we're doing is we're teaching them that it's okay to treat us or the people around us in a certain way, even though we don't feel that way. And so we're not being honest with them. And we're not being loving to them by, you know, showing them, hey, that's not okay. And I need better from you. And the world needs better from you. And honest, obviously, that's subjective. But, you know, it is it is an act of self-love, and I guess in some ways an act of other love and loving God and the world, that we set boundaries and that we don't just tolerate everything. There's this phrase that's been going around a lot in some of the communities I'm in, the paradox of intolerance. And I don't remember the exact phrasing, but basically that in order to be welcoming to all, it can't be to all. We can't welcome the people who are threatening our community. Right. And that we do have to exclude some if they can, if, you know, we set boundary and they can't abide by that. So I think that in the midst of this, there's a listening, and there is trying to empathize, but there's also saying at a certain point, okay, but no, this isn't going to work out right now or maybe ever, and we need to separate.
I struggled with the whole Hitler question, and, you know, it's kind of an academic one because we don't know him and we're not in his life, so we don't relate. But I was challenged to look at his artwork when he was in art school. It's stunningly beautiful. And to have to grapple with the idea that the same person who did these horrendous things also housed that beauty. And in Ephesians, I think, sorry if it isn't, where it talks about, you know, if there's anything good, if there's anything pure, if there's anything lovely, of good repute, you know, think on these things. And to try in those mini Hitlers that are in our own lives, to try to find that beauty and truth and loveliness in there. And sometimes you have to look under an awful lot of layers. But love takes the time to look. And to be able to encourage that and to call that out of them and to allow them to know that this is how I see you may give them the courage to let that bit of themselves that's so guarded grow a little. I'd encourage you all to look up Hitler's art and just to hold the dichotomy and to realize that we all hold those things, the good and the not so good, within us. But our job as believers is to call out what is good and to cause it to flourish and to encourage it.
Hi, I have an example. Thank you for your preschool example. It reminded me of an example from my own life where I have several cousins in the Midwest who are Christians but have a different way of thinking about that. I'll just leave that at that. And I have struggled over the years, and my father has struggled over the years. My father is a pastor, and he's written emails to this particular cousin just to explain his views on things, and they've had a dialogue over the years. This particular cousin has posted privately on Facebook to me recently not only her joys about a new great-grandchild, but also that she has cancer in her eye that is really not treatable, and it is fatal. And she's has shared in great detail about, you know, having to go, I think she had to go to Iowa City for treatment or assessments. And she also has said that she's at peace with this. You know, as a believer, I believe that for her. And I've struggled with how to respond to her because I know I have ideological differences with her. And for a while, I didn't respond at all. But recently, I just responded, and I wished her well. And I what I ended up doing was setting aside the differences, right? To just wish her well and to let her know I'm thinking about her and I'm sorry that she, her days on earth are probably limited at this point. And I just sent that off. And I realized what happened inside of myself was it just kind of diffused the rancor of differences, you know, that it changed me to be able to just send that loving message. And I think it's partly because of this series, you know, this series of how can I love my cousin even if I have differences, and especially because of there's not much time left. So I wanted to share that.
Thank you so much for sharing that. And I think that raises another really helpful thing for us all to keep in mind in this conversation and in our endeavors to love. It makes me think of a lyrics from a John Foreman song where he says, oh, what is it? Something to the effect of, like, whenever I find myself, like, cursing at the traffic or the phone, I remind myself that we all have cancer in our bones, we're terminal. And it's this, like, you know, whether it's the literal cancer, but that reminder of, like, we're all in this mortal existence together. We all are heading towards death, and that has this way of putting things in perspective, right? So just remembering that, like, none of us are going to be here forever, right? And knowing that we will all have to face that, whatever death is, that final darkness and then whatever comes on the other side. It's really, really humbling for me to consider. Oh yeah, I was thinking about your question, Heather, and like the idea of it's good that you exist and how can we say that about certain individuals. And I like April Lynn's point about distinguishing between the actions and the person. And I think another piece of that too, and I mean this is like goes all the way back through my Christian upbringing, but like the grace and mercy of God is always deeper, right, than whatever anyone's done. And continuing to hold out that hope, to hold out the possibility for redemption, for restoration, for healing. Again, it sounds, I'm in that idealism with you, Wayne, but like I have to believe that no one is ever beyond that.
Yeah, just kind of going off the Hitler the thing, right? Going back to that, and then what Andrew's saying is like two people that come to mind that lived through that experience are Viktor Frankl and Corrie Ten Boom, and that both of those lives, speak to the idea of seeing beyond and seeing deeper, and it be literally looking in the face of that evil and walking away with that expansive perspective of humanity. Mm-hmm. Neither one. And Viktor Frankl, these are names that you can Google or whatnot. And Corrie Ten Boom, I think actually Andrew quoted from her at a not too long ago in front. Neither one having faced death and seeing everything lost came away with this chip on their shoulder or whatever, rightful, justified chip on their shoulder against Hitler or anyone else. They came away with this idea of hope and bottomless love that goes way deeper than anything we can imagine. So, you know, so those are living, were living examples of that kind of stuff. And they're all around us right now. Like right in this room, there's people who have lived through trauma and are sitting here today, like, you know, experiencing that. So
I just wanted to make a comment. I missed most of the series. I think I saw the first one and one other one. But I'm really stoked to be in a place that studies this stuff. I just want to share a perspective on the opposite of we're only here for a certain amount of time is that we get to be here. Like, what are the flipping odds that we are here now sharing this planet together? You know, what are the odds? It's like one in a, I don't know, trillion or however many souls have ever been here and that will be here. It's like crazy. So it's kind of like, wow, that's my perspective. Like, you know, I haven't had to deal with really harsh stuff. I'm actually working on potentially a ministry called Forever Found, dealing with, you know, human trafficking and, you know, the horrific things that happen to young, you know, women and men as well. And, you know, the dehumanizing of both the victims and the survivors that I could be working with, and also those that perpetrate those. But still, you know, in this grand scheme of things, what are the odds that we're here together, and where are the lessons? And it's this message of strength to love is where you get to the gold. You know, there's gold in the hills. You know, even with a neighbor that you might really wish was not living on the planet right now.
The thought that's going through my head is that if we're loving people conditionally, like they have to meet certain standards in order for us to love, then we're not loving at all like God loves us.
Just remember something my mama used to say to me, and I had this neighbor that I hated, and one day my mom came to me and she said, just remember God made you and he also made Tiffany, and everyone has a purpose in his eyes.
If it's cool, I'd like to read a poem to you guys and I think close it out timing-wise. Something that hasn't come up yet, the word itself is patience. Yeah, but another word for patience, another term is long-suffering. Yeah. Long-suffering. So I want to read a poem to you guys, if it's all right. I sent this to the men's group last week. It's from Desjardins, and it's called Patient Trust. Above all, trust in the slow work of God. We are quite naturally impatient in everything to reach the end without delay. We should like to skip the intermediate stages. We are impatient of being on the way to something unknown, something new. And yet it is the law of all progress that it is made by passing through some stages of instability, and that it may take a very long time. And so I think it is with you, your ideas mature gradually. Let them grow. Let them shape themselves without undue haste. Don't try to force them on as though you could be today what time, that is to say, grace and circumstances acting on your goodwill, will make of you tomorrow. Only God could say what this new spirit gradually forming within you will be. Give our Lord the benefit of believing that his hand is leading you, and accept the anxiety of feeling yourself in suspense and incomplete.
They'll reset the stage and the band can